Welcome to the special edition of ICTJ's podcast. We're in a conversation with David Tolbert, the president of ICTJ. We will be looking back at the year that is nearing its end and exploring the most significant development in transitional justice over the past year, as well as some of ICTJ's milestones. David, welcome.
Very good to be here with you, Rafik.
To start off this conversation, what, in your opinion, are the most important developments of the year if we look at it from the perspective of transitional justice? What stands out for you?
Obviously, what's been going on in the Middle East, North Africa, at least in terms of the headlines, it's been the major conversation or the major discussion point around transitional justice. Kind of as a cautionary note, I mean, we're still early in these transitions. I know it's been a year or more now, but actually that's a relatively short period of time when we look at transitions. If I look back to Argentina, which is a very successful transition, that went over several decades. So while I think it's important to focus on the Middle East and North Africa, I think we have to keep our perspectives and take a longer view. I think there's some other places where there's been progress, much more measurable progress that we could talk about. Colombia is a good example. I'm sure we'll get into more detail there. But we've been really deeply engaged at ICTJ in the Colombia process, and the political changes in Colombia have led to some really important developments, for example. There have been, obviously, in Africa, a number of developments in sub-Saharan Africa, some much more positive than others, and I'm sure we'll get into that discussion. And if we come back to the Middle East and North Africa, obviously Syria is a dominant part of the conversation. At the other time, we're not talking about a transition at this point. A lot of focus has come over the last year in Burma or Myanmar. I think it's very early to talk too much about that, and this is one of the things that I think we have to take into consideration when we talk about transitions and transitional justice. As I said earlier, I think we have to take a little bit longer view. What are the authorities' real attitudes about this transition, about these changes, about this reform? On a broader kind of policy level, we've had the rule of law debate at the UN. You had the rule of law document, which was a consensus document. I mean, I think it's a mixed picture. Obviously, any consensus document is one that is not necessarily going to represent the best thinking in this area. But, I mean, I was really pleased to see the language on transitional justice, which I think has a normative impact. I think it's in line with what we've seen in the Secretary General's report back in 2004 on rule of law and transitional justice. And so I think we're seeing a consolidation there. The European Union is looking at a policy and consulting with us about developing a deeper approach and policy on transitional justice. And certainly I think that the appointment by the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva of a special rapporteur for truth, justice, reparations, and guarantees of non-recurrence. So that's certainly a major development. There are developments on the policy front, on the mechanism front, for lack of a better term, with the creation of the special rapporteur. A lot of developments on the ground and really almost in virtually every region in the world. Some of it has been encouraging, and as in this line of work, some of it's pretty discouraging. But I guess the headline would be that there's a lot of activity, there's a lot of focus on transitional justice. It's very relevant to all the discussions and both the post-conflict societies and the post-authoritarian societies that we're working in. So its relevance is without question. The transitions themselves, I'm sure we'll get into that. That's a much longer conversation.
We will get into the specific country contexts, but I would like to start from the last point that you just made and use that to illustrate that even from the perspective of the discourse, transitional justice is emerging as a concept which is becoming more and more familiar to many opinion makers and carries far more importance than it used to. But I would say that the appointment of the UN Special Rapporteur on Truth, Justice, Reparations, and Guarantees of Non-Recurrence speaks to that that finally at that policy-making level, transitional justice is becoming a concept which is not only academic, it is not only being promoted by a small group of practitioners and countries, but is being embraced on a wider level. What do you think is concrete, specific significance of this new post and its mandate? What will it be able to achieve? And let's not mention that the special rapporteur is, we are proud to say, someone who comes from the ranks of ICTJ Director of Research Unit, Pablo de Greve.
Yes, I'm glad you said it. And of course, we're very proud, and I'm particularly pleased that Pablo is the special rapporteur. I can think of no one who is better qualified for the post, who brings the intellectual framework, the policy understanding, and practical experience to what's a huge job, because we're talking about transitional justice. We're looking at a wide variety of countries around the world. I think what it means in terms of a policy or level is that this term transitional justice, which really comes out of the last 30 years of experience, now has a meaning and has a kind of normative framework that we can talk about. And I think it's very useful, the actual title, and despite the fact that it's long, it tells us what transitional justice is really about. And I think it helps address some of the underlying misconceptions about transitional justice. One that was around for a long time, there was somehow another kind of soft justice, that somehow another accountability or criminal justice processes were not part of that. Or that it was a kind of, as you said, a kind of academic approach. I think the creation of the special rapporteur by countries, many of which would not be advocates of soft justice, many of them which would not be academically inclined in any kind of real way, means that it is now really entered into the mainstream of the whole human rights dialogue. And then I think with this special rapporteur, it's not simply about non-governmental organizations like ICTJ and others or activists. There's a real recognition that there's a role for the United Nations system to play, that this is a key policy element. And I think I would also tie that to the World Development Report, which recognized, I think, in a very clear way that transitional justice is a key policy tool, is a key element to countries that are in transitions, whether we're talking about post-authoritarian or post-conflict societies, so that when policymakers and those who are dealing with these issues, and governments are dealing with these issues, and societies are just dealing with these issues, it's not a kind of free-floating concept where we attach whatever meaning we want to, but there's a real normative framework that we're talking about. And I think it's one of the things that ICTJ brings, is that we help try to frame that discussion, and we've been instrumental in helping define that normative framework, and it's also by practice. There have been 40 truth commissions now. There's a lot of experience. There have been domestic prosecutions in many different jurisdictions, reparations programs, and so forth. So we can actually talk about, I don't like the term toolbox, but a set of measures that we can get broad experience on, and we can bring that comparative experience to bear in these really difficult situations.
Talking about difficult situations, I think that inevitably we have to start with Arab Spring,
right?
Last year. Great deal of hope, revolutions in countries from Tunisia to Yemen have brought changes that many not only could not anticipate, but could not imagine happening in any near future. However, today the situation looks a bit scattered in terms of the shape and form that these transitions are taking. I would like to ask you, what is your take on what is happening in the Middle East and North Africa, and what has ICTJ's role been?
There have been some positive elements and, as you say, a number of setbacks. Some of this, of course, is normal. revolutions, changes in society are not usually on a straight line basis. They're going to be ups and they're going to be downs. So some of this should not be too surprising. And in a complicated and diverse society like Egypt, there are some positives there that has held free elections. Now, there are big questions about what's going on right now, but I think we'll have to look at this over the long term and not the short term. So I think that's a cautionary note. That's the first thing I would say. And you can look at other countries or regions that have been through transitions, and there are a lot of ups and downs. And even Latin America, which we point to frequently, or if you look at post-war Germany, which today we would talk about as in some ways a model of transition. There was certainly a period in which it wasn't. It wasn't the Nuremberg trials at the end of the day that really changed that dialogue. It was really much more trials that happened about Auschwitz and the country itself, and changes in the curriculum and memorialization and over a long period of time. Of course, the Middle East and North Africa has particular regional characteristics, and each country is going to be different. I agree with you. I think in Tunisia there appear to be real opportunities. There's been a national transitional justice dialogue that opened the discussion broadly, as I think we would have liked to have seen and as we advocated for, or at least supported. There's a president that's a committed human rights activist. There's a lot of political tension in the country between the sort of secular, or what's sometimes called the liberal groups, and then the Islamicist groups. And that is something that has to work out over time. There are a lot of tensions in the country. At the same time, given this dialogue, you have a Ministry for Human Rights and Transitional Justice. The Truth Commission appears to be moving forward. It looks like there's a good transitional justice framework that's being put in place. The Truth Commission, we've given advice on. There are issues about compensation reparations that have been more complicated and, I think, politicized. But I think all in all, given all the bumps in the road, I think we can be kind of cautiously optimistic about the process in Tunisia. And one of the reasons that we've been engaged in Tunisia fairly deeply, and I've been there myself twice, one to participate in the launch of the Transitional Justice Dialogue, and I've met with the president and other ministers, is that it potentially could be a bit of a spark, a bit of a model for the rest of the region. And I see it as a place where if we have some success, and of course, when we talk about transitional justice and we talk about transitions, we're always talking probably about relative success. You're not going to have a societal turnaround after the kind of repression that Ben Ali and his predecessors had overnight. I think outsiders look and they somehow or another expect that the fingers will snap, there's a revolution, and things are different. Didn't happen in Eastern Europe, didn't happen in Latin America, it's not going to happen in the Middle East.
I think that we cannot talk about MENA region as it is known without exactly addressing the role of outsiders, international community. And very often when speaking to colleagues from the region, activists, journalists, they speak of this anger about what they perceive as inconsistent approach. So we have very quick action in Libya, but complete absence of action in Syria. We have one treatment for abuses in Tunisia, but Bahrain goes on with its repression of local human rights activists and their efforts. What would you say would be a response to such views on the role of international community?
Well, I think the first thing to say and to admit, there's fairness in the criticism. I mean, it is true that the response of the Security Council, the response of the great powers, has been different, and they have political interest, and I think we have to realize that. This is not an ideal world, and I think we have to acknowledge that and be upfront about it and be critical of it. I mean, I'm critical, and I think we're critical of the idea that one person is justice is given to one person and not the next because of political circumstances. That's something we resist. That's something we fight against. On the other hand, we cannot use the fact that the world is not perfect to say we don't have any justice at all. So if we have people who are brought to justice and Libya is going to make progress, it's not an excuse not to take an action in Libya because we can't take action in Syria. I think we had to be really clear of that. And sometimes I think the critics, if you take their argument to the logical extreme, it means that if we're not perfect in country X, we can't do anything in country X or Y. So I think the focus really has to be on the societies themselves, and we try to engage in the societies themselves. Obviously, we want to see the UN. We want to see countries that have resources and countries that have power engage in practices that are consistent with human rights. We want to see them promote transitional justice. Do they do that? No. Frequently they don't. If we look at what happened in Iraq with the U.S. and the international forces, it did not happen. But that doesn't mean that in Tunisia we shouldn't be trying to work with international partners to try to make that happen. So the fact that there's hypocrisy and the fact that there are double standards on the international stage, is that a surprise? No. So I think we have to confront that argument and we have to acknowledge that argument. But at the same time, we have to say, let's see what we can do where there are openings.
Talking about longer term and moving to a completely different part of the world, I don't think nothing illustrates better this point about long-term nature of these processes than what are now chances of success in Colombia, a country with decades of civil war, very brutal, with huge number of victims, is now seeing an opportunity for peace. There are talks between the government and leftist FARC rebels. Transitional justice is at the heart of both the ongoing peace talks, but also of the process of this country trying to deal with the legacy of this long-running conflict. How would you assess the chances for Colombia to be a model for transitional justice?
Well, what I would say is that Colombia today represents a place where we're seeing real transitional justice measures being put into practice, or at least the start of that process, whereas a few years ago we wouldn't have said that. And as you say, it's been a long, brutal civil war, oppression, crimes committed on a vast scale. So transitional justice really does need to be at the heart of the process in Colombia. There are a lot of lessons to be learned from Colombia that we can take to other places. We're not going to replicate Colombia itself, but I think it does also show the importance of having political leadership that is willing to take some risks. So the Santos government has gone into the negotiations with the FARC. They have been willing to tackle some difficult issues. And I think we're seeing it on a number of fronts. There's the discussions on the Truth Commission. There are discussions which ICTJ has really provided a lot of advice on prioritizing the prosecutions and to make revisions to the peace and justice law so that it's effective. Because it wasn't that long ago that the peace and justice law was so gummed up with the process that it was becoming quite ineffective. So they're really tackling issues on the prosecution front. They're tackling issues in terms of a truth commission on reparations, which I think is really important to establish trust of the victims. There's definitely movement on that, and the government's moving on land reform. We see a transitional justice being applied in a kind of across the board in a way. The early reports or where we are now are quite encouraging. Now, obviously, let's see how things turn out in Havana and Oslo on the negotiations. Let's see how the land reform process goes on. Let's see how the reparations process goes on. Let's see how successful they are in taking the reforms to prosecute those who are most responsible for the most serious crimes. Let's see if they get the truth-telling processes going. For us, and it's our largest office, and we're working with the government and with officials in exactly the way that I would want us to work. We're providing the kind of high-end technical assistance to see that these things happen. So I think there's a lot to be encouraged about. Of course, you're dealing with a long conflict with a lot of terrible crimes, a lot of terrible abuses. So it's going to be a long-term process. But yeah, I would agree with you. I think this is a place where transitional justice is really working on the ground, one that we've deeply invested in.
Talking about the different process where we engaged Kenya's Truth, Justice and Reconciliation Commission somehow was marred with problems from the beginning, with the appointment of a very controversial person as a chairperson of the commission and the resistance that it encountered, then a breakthrough in which it was possible for the commission to do some good work and try to make up for the delays that happened. And now, unfortunately, we see yet another period of stagnation. You have published an opinion piece internationally and in the country which calls on the Truth Commission to come out with a report in even a shortened version in order to prevent the erosion of credibility due to their request to have the publication of the report postponed until after the elections. What are your thoughts on Kenya? What are your hopes for the situation in Kenya, especially with the elections approaching?
Well, I'll tell you what my concern is, and it's one of the reasons that I did the op-ed, because we're not an advocacy organization. We would go public with these concerns only if we didn't see private avenues that were available. But we're approaching 4 years since the post-election violence, and there was a reason the Truth Commission was set up, and it was to look at the root causes of the post-election violence. Now, if we have another election and we haven't had the Truth Commission report, then the Truth Commission really, in a real sense, has failed. And that's what we're really deeply concerned about. Yes, there were a lot of problems in the beginning, but they have a job to do. They need to get the job done before the election occurs. If it doesn't happen, if it comes after the election, if it comes 2 or 3 years from now, it really hasn't served its purpose. It was designed to get its work done and report relatively quickly for reasons, and I think very good ones. So that's what we're really calling them. And let's don't make the perfect enemy the good here. We'd rather have a report that gives the society, gives victims and civil society and the government a view into this that doesn't have to be extensive. You don't have to write every last detail. So we're calling for the commission to come out with a report. And it doesn't have to be perfect, but the society needs to know the root causes of this conflict.
From our conversation, it is very clear that last year has seen an explosion of different transitional justice initiatives and successes and some scenarios which were not so successful. ICTJ has been involved in most of the significant developments in transitional justice across the globe. But what would you say in your mind are the most significant achievements, the highlights of ICTJ's work in the last year?
One thing I'd frame this answer around is that what we really re-emphasized at ICTJ, and I think it goes back to the roots, but perhaps we got away from it a bit over the last few years, and that is to ensure that we're providing the top-level best technical assistance on transitional justice. And by that, I'm talking about all the measures, whether we're talking about criminal justice, truth-telling, truth and memory, reparations, sometimes called reparative justice, institutional reform, and also with some important cross-cutting themes, gender and children in armed conflict. So I think we have been able to provide technical assistance at a very high level in a number of contexts. So, I mean, I would highlight that in a kind of general sense, and then let me talk about some particulars, because I think that's what ICTJ does best. And so in terms of our own work, I think when we're actually giving advice, for example, in Tunisia on the draft law to the Minister of Transitional Justice on the Truth Commission, this is great work. And I would say we'll have to see how that pans out in reality. But we're giving the kind of technical and policy advice that governments who are inclined in this direction are willing to listen to and listen to seriously. So I would call that a kind of overarching achievement for the organization. The countries I would point to, and we talked about this to some extent earlier, but I think Colombia, for the reasons that I've noted earlier, is a place where we've had a very significant impact across the board in transitional justice in terms of prioritization of criminal prosecutions, in terms of providing advice on the peace and justice law, in terms of reparations, which is really important in the terms of the discussion of the Truth Commission. So a whole wide variety of really significant inputs from ICTJ and at very senior levels, at high levels. And I think, as I mentioned, I think Tunisia is a place as well. Then I think we look at Cote d'Ivoire, which is a more problematic situation, but we're approaching it in the same way. A lot of work with the Truth Commission to try to push that forward, and also the prosecution cells. There are other places where, even if it's problematic, I'm pleased with their interventions. We tried a lot with the Kenyan Truth Commission. It's in a lot of trouble. We're intervening, unusually a bit for us, in the public forum to try to see that that commission actually delivers in a timely way, so that when the upcoming elections come around, the Truth Commission has actually done something. Now, that's not necessarily an achievement, but it's something where I think we're playing the right role for us. I think also, on a broader front, we're engaged in a pretty serious discussion on truth and memory and truth commissions. We're going to be, in the coming year, we're going to be having some really serious discussions on truth commissions coming out of peace processes. We've seen very problematic in Kenya and Nepal. And we're going to be working with the Kofi Annan Foundation on that. And I think that's potentially a very strong step forward. We've had really our fourth meeting on complementarity. It's even now it's called the Green Tree Process, where we've had a real interaction and I think understanding about what needs to happen to have domestic prosecutions, investigations in line with the complementarity principle of the Rome Statute. And I think that we've been able to bring justice actors together with development actors and rule of law implementers in a unique way. This, I think, was really recognized by the Assembly of State Parties, who invited me and others to talk about this at their most recent meeting. On research, I'd like to highlight that. We haven't talked much about that, but ICTJ has long had an important role in terms of research and in the transitional justice field. You can think back to the book on reparations, which is really a groundbreaking document. We've had a number of other publications, but I'd point particularly to the Transitional Justice and Displacement book and series of events. It wasn't just a publication. It was presented in a lot of capitals, Switzerland, Canada, et cetera. And I think that this is an important issue where transitional justice's role was there but not articulated like it has been now, and I think this important project. And of course this harkens back to some extent to the great work that we did partially this year, partially last year, over the last several years on the World Development Report. ICTJ was really the only justice actor at the table in terms of the World Development Report. And the World Development Report is really a significant policy breakthrough in that it recognizes the deep linkages between security, development, and justice. And we've seen that play out a bit more this year in the language in the Rule of Law Declaration, which I said is the document itself would be quite critical of in some ways, but in terms of the language on transitional justice is strong, and we're very pleased to see that. And we're having a policy impact in a number of capitals. And also we're looking to do that in the coming year in Brussels. So I think it's on a number of levels. Some of it is very much on the ground. Some of it is more of a, in terms of thinking and in terms of intellectual engagement, policy level engagement. There are a variety of successes. And as in this field, usually the challenge is outnumber the successes. So we have a lot to do for next year and the coming years as well.
Well, we will close on that very briefly for our listeners. What would be your message as the president of ICTJ as we enter yet another year, which promises to be very pregnant with transitional justice issues?
Well, I'd like to thank our supporters, first of all. We have a number of donors who are really true partners with us, a number of governments and foundations, and a few individuals. So I'd like to, first of all, really thank them. I'd like to express my appreciation to our staff. I think we've got a tremendous staff, which is growing stronger and stronger. I look around the room at my colleagues, and I'm always learning from them. Don't tell them that, but I'm impressed by them and the commitment and dedication they bring to the field. And then I'd like to say to all of those out there who are wondering a little bit about what transitional justice is and what ICTJ does, to have a look at this, because we have many countries in transition. We're going to have more next year and then coming years. And transitional justice is, in the words of the World Development Report, a key policy tool in dealing with transitional societies. Have a look at our website, www.ictj.org. You'll find a lot of information. Other than that, I wish everybody happy holidays and a good new year, and we'll look forward to being in touch in one way or the other in the coming year.
David Tolbert, thank you very much, and a happy new year to all our listeners.